ETL Echo presents Lost and Found by Kyono Miko. Hermione watches the bricks close, her eyes locked on Draco's as the wall separates them once again. Has it really only been 3 days? Has so little time passed, and yet everything has changed? She's still reeling from it. How has she evolved from distaste to such strong desire so quickly? She shakes her head at herself, unsure and not really caring. All she knows is that she woke this morning pinned between the strong arms of a wizard, and she rather liked it. Ron, of course, is going to absolutely have pixies over it, but doing things to please other people is not the top of Hermione's current priorities. At this exact moment, her top priority is continuing where she left off with Draco in bed. She sincerely hopes he doesn't take his time in coming back.
Princess?
Hermione looks over to find the three ladies looking at her with pity.
Sweet princess, foe Padma says, we can only imagine the sorrow you must feel. Surely your love will return to you within a day. His love cannot be bound, nor his bravery tethered. He will come for you and claim you as his own.
It's fantasy drivel and very bad scripting, but there is something about Draco claiming her that doesn't sound all that bad. Not even half bad. Sounds pretty bleeding great, actually. She smiles and thanks the girls for their concern, assuring them she has faith in her beau. And she does, oddly enough. The strangest thing to come from this whole experience is that Hermione is pretty sure she can rely on Malfoy for at least a small selection of tasks. He will return for her, just as the story says, and he will whisk her away, back to Hogwarts, of course. And then, if she has anything to say about it, he's going to claim the hell out of her. Hermione does a little hop in place, excitement bubbling all the way to her toes, and begins fantasizing about the next time they'll meet.
What the fuck do you mean, 3 days?
A reedy and obnoxious guard wearing the face of Theodore Knott looks down his nose at Draco, hand resting lovingly on the hilt of his sword. The tosser did always have a bit of an obsession with cock. Knott sneers at him and answers,
His Highness is not entertaining any attempts to find the princess until after renovations are complete in the throne room. He will not grant you an audience until then. So, to recap, you'll have to wait 3 days.
He grins, and Draco could punch the sod.
And just what am I supposed to do until then?
He really doesn't expect an answer. Truthfully, he's sort of shouting at the room at large.
Crawl back to whatever hovel you call home, unless you need a place to wait it out.
The lascivious look the other man gives Draco is offensively obvious. With a great deal of dramatics, Draco turns on his heel and stomps away, hearing the guard snicker at his back as he retreats. 3 more days in this pit of hell? When he parted ways with the peddler, promising emptily to find him once he was a proper prince, he made his way immediately back to the castle, giddy at the prospect of rescuing Granger and enjoying her, he expected, grateful performance. Now he's stuck returning to Molly Weasley's grimy pub for half a wretched week. The prospect is nauseating. Making his way down the dusty, rocky footpath, he refuses to acknowledge it as a road. He tries to think of the very pleasant inevitability of seeing Granger again. It seems strange, his excitement at seeing the witch. Had he become so invested in only 3 days? Is it an effect of the room? The fairy tale setting? No, his mind is his own. He doesn't feel any different than usual. It's only his perspective on her that has changed. Maybe changed isn't even the right word. Broadened, perhaps. She's still a haughty little know-it-all, but it seems a bit endearing when he can merely tease her for it. She's still a muggle-born, but that stopped meaning as much to him as it once did. It still means things. It says that her family will never be as involved in her life as his own, that she will constantly be learning about his world. Things that he has known on instinct since birth. But why hate for that? Why begrudge her a different experience for the first 11 years of her life? Instead, he is starting to view that as an opportunity. He can share a world with her she's only barely tasted, and she, sponge of knowledge that she is, will lap it up with gratitude. Sounds fucking fun, honestly. Not to mention, Merlin, she's fit. Surprisingly so. And that kiss was almost skillful enough to make him jealous of the wizards who came before him, those who saw her value, while he was blinded by misguided goals. His feet ease their tense plodding as he approaches the pub/inn/pit of despair, stomping certainly not doing any good, but only stirring the dirt onto his shoes. When he enters, the Weasley matriarch perks up in a rather disconcerting way.
"Good to see you, love. A bit of stew and some ale?"
Draco squeezes his eyes closed for a moment, taking a very deep breath, and then nods and makes his way to the table where he met the peddler days ago. Before long, a piping bowl of slop is sitting before him. What he wouldn't give for an apple. If he had known this was what awaited him, he might have smuggled a bit from the princess's chambers. Sighing in resignation, Draco takes a very long pull from the mug, careful to drink awkwardly just above the handle, where it is likely the cleanest, and tries to remember he isn't really here. Hogwarts is just outside an invisible door, the professor waiting to hear all about their adventure. The experience thus far, while inconvenient at the moment, still has been worth it. He thinks back to Granger, arched beneath him, her thighs hugging his hips. Molly Weasley coughs, catching his attention, blowing him a kiss from across the room. He shudders.
Mostly worth it.
He hasn't come. Hermione can't believe he hasn't come. It's been 2 days, each one filled with the same inane chatter of her handmaids, her father's visits, unsettling as they are as he subtly gropes her ladies, and the same tedious passage of time she had known before Draco arrived. What on earth is keeping him? There is nothing in the fairy tale of additional plights or challenges. Her self-confidence had slumped lately into the previous day, wondering if he had regretted their hint of a tryst. But even that seems unlikely. Even if he did not want to pursue what it was they'd barely begun, surely he wants to leave the room enough not to let that stop his return. Then she'd begun to worry. What if there was something else standing in his way? The fairy tale in the book her room holds has been a synopsis at best. What if there's another, more in-depth, grim, if you'll pardon the pun, version where he has to chop off his own feet or something equally grotesque? She has to remind herself of her circumstances. Surely no actual harm could befall them in the room.
"Princess, do not fret."
She looks up at Lavender, not at all liking the pity on her face. It's a look she imagines she might have given Lavender once upon a time, in a reality where Ron and Hermione had been less of a disaster, and Lavender had survived. She might have given her that same look, a woman who sees that another has been rejected.
"I'm not fretting,"
she bites out, conscious that she has been pacing a hole in the ornate carpet, and flops down on a chair with a huff. Her arms cross over her chest, and she glances away from that maddening look. Cho approaches, kneeling at Hermione's feet.
"He will return, Highness. I've never seen such love reflected on a gentleman's face."
Hermione snorts.
"You've never seen gentlemen, period. You live in a blasted prison."
Padma gasps.
"Princess, you cannot mean that. Your father has built us a sanctuary, safe and free of the troubles of life."
She levels all three of them with a look, feeling cruel.
"You are delusional, which is fitting since you're also an illusion."
They stare at her blankly, as she had assumed they would. Anything too far off script seems not to resonate with them in any way. The bricks across the room begin to shift, and Hermione stands, eager and hopeful. Her hope is dashed pretty spectacularly when, once again, it is only her lech of a father who ambles through the gap in the wall.
"And how are the fairest ladies in the kingdom this fine evening?"
The three giggle and titter. Hermione gags. He makes his way to the sofa, and the maidens follow behind, falling into position draped over him, like a slutty little blanket. Hermione hates it here. She hopes this doesn't put her off when she sees her father next.
"Father,"
she begins, trying very hard to ignore his hand resting on the swell of Cho's small breast.
"Have there been no suitors recently? It seems it has been some time since anyone attempted to find me. Maybe they've all given up, and you could just let me live in the palace with you?"
He laughs, that annoying, condescending laugh that makes her grind her teeth.
"My precious jewel, they will never tire of searching for you. You are the most beautiful and valuable treasure in the kingdom."
Fuck, that's so misogynistic. Nothing but a toy to keep. She starts to say something, though she knows he won't really hear it. Just to vent a little. Unfortunately, he goes on before she can really let loose.
"Of course there are suitors, pet. But the throne room is being redecorated, and I just cannot entertain them until it is complete. Why, just today, my guards had to turn away at least 4 young men.
I can't be distracted by this nonsense while the carpets are being newly arranged. She gapes at him. She's stuck here because of fucking carpets? Has Draco come then? Was he one of the men sent away? He must be livid. Probably holed up in that nasty pub with Molly Weasley making passes at him. All right, that's a little funny. Maybe they'll laugh about this later. Or maybe Hermione will. Somewhat relieved, she asks, "And when do you suppose the room will be finished?"
"Well, I had thought tomorrow, but I've been told there are delays. You know these artisans and smiths, always working on their own schedule. Seems it might be a bit longer."
"That's disappointing, but surely it will be soon. Perhaps the day after, then?" He's no longer listening, gazing at Lavender as she arranges the tendrils of hair on his forehead, and Padma gently massages his shoulder. She turns with a huff and goes to her usual space, the bed hidden by a divider, and flops onto her stomach to have a bit of a pout. If she is to play the part of a headstrong teenage princess, she may as well accept the challenge. When he bids her a good evening, after some time with a fair amount of giggling from the other side of the room, she resolutely does not acknowledge him at all. Draco had returned to the palace on the third day, only to be told that the renovations were still underway, and no one was granted leave to see the king. He had grumped and protested, screaming at Theo to let him pass, only to be hauled away and thrown into the street like a beggar. It was mortifying, honestly. On the fourth day, it was much the same. Then the fifth, the sixth. After one full, miserable week, Draco slouching away without the usual fanfare, he had made a decision. Obviously, the room had tweaked the tale, so Draco decides he's done playing by the rules of the story. He finds a local shepherd and buys a lamb pelt with what paltry amount of coin his character has left, and makes his way to the castle. It's the same as before. Draco is walking upright, completely normal, but with a virtual carcass on his back, the legs tied under his chin like a bonnet. So fucking stupid, but if this is what it takes. He saunters past Nott, making no attempt to enter through the gate, and circles the perimeter looking for another entrance. He finds it in the form of a low wall with ivy crawling up its face. Seeker reflexes in his pocket, he begins the task of scaling the greenery until he is hopping over the side and into the castle proper. There are other animals here, dogs mostly, a few rabbits, all domesticated, it seems. No one, no guards, none of the ladies or lords milling about give him any notice. The path to Hermione's secret chamber is hardly well guarded. The magic keeping her inside must be enough for the king, assuming no one would find her. And really, with those nonsense magic words, who the fuck would? A side entrance by the kitchens, a few corridors and abandoned halls, and Draco finds himself underground once more. When he reaches the wall, brown on this side, but he knows to be silver within, he promptly mutters, "Open, Sartara Martara of the Earth." And the bricks begin to slide away. He feels agitated just having to say the ridiculous spell. What does that even mean? Inside, nothing has changed. The handmaidens are lounging about, feeding grapes to one another, and Hermione is nowhere to be seen. Hiding, he would imagine, keeping to herself on the other side of the screen.
"I'm not feeling up to a visit, thanks."
He hears her voice, and there is an annoyed edge in her tone. Draco looks at the ladies, noting they are surprised to see him. He tosses the carcass off with a flourish and presses his finger to his lips, signaling for them to be quiet. His week has been fucking awful. Meals disgusting, bedding infested, and company appalling. But his mood has just vastly improved. On the other side of the screen waits his witch, and how fun it will be to surprise her. Feeling devilish and boyish and happier than he's been in days, he creeps around the room, shooting the ladies a wink. They giggle into their hands and shake their heads at his roguish behavior. At the divider, he peers around, finding Granger laid prone, her arms folded over her chest and eyes tightly closed, pouting. As quietly as he can, he circles the bed until he is just beside her. She starts to move, and he takes the chance, pouncing atop her and stifling her scream with his lips on hers. Hermione had heard the moving of the bricks and the giggling of her ladies, and decided to stay behind her screen and hide. She had no interest in playing nice with her fake father or any other aspect of this inane story. She thinks she's played along pretty well up until now, but the room is taking liberties, and she very much doesn't bloody appreciate it. She had ignored the shuffling and giggling as he entered the room, waiting for that sickening sweet daughter to come from beyond her sleeping area, but it never came. Squeezing her eyes closed, feigning sleep, was probably a childish response, but Hermione absolutely does not care. The room can go hang. So when a set of warm lips had pressed against hers, the bed jostling simultaneously, Hermione's reaction had been understandable surprise. It did not take long, however, to understand that the story had not taken an incestuous turn, but that Draco, somehow, had crawled into her bed. Now Hermione surges into the kiss, relieved to see him. Surely this means their nightmare is nearly over. Is this their happily ever after moment? The kiss is needy and hurried, Hermione's arms wrapping around his back, pulling him down on top of her. Draco hardly protests, settling in on his side, half loomed above her. His mouth gentles, urgency melting into a slower, less desperate affair. The rush is turning into something more sensual, and Hermione luxuriates in it. His lips slow even further, coaxing her into soft nips, tongue teasing rather than invading, until finally he stops and pulls just enough away to look at her.
"Hi,"
she exhales, barely a sound accompanying her breath. His eyes crinkle with his answering grin.
"Good to see you, witch."
Altogether too sincere, she admits the same.
"You too. Did the king finally let you in?"
He scoffs at her, rolling his eyes in agitation.
"Hardly. I've been asking nearly every day for a week, sometimes twice a day. Some prick that looks like Theo Knott keeps turning me away."
Hermione squints at him in question.
"Then how did you make it back here?"
She's disappointed when he rolls away, but it's only for a moment. Draco reaches over the side of the bed and then rolls back over atop her, brandishing a clump of wool in his hand. She chuckles at him as soon as she realizes.
"You came in as a sheep again?"
"I'm not spending one more night eating gruel and lying on straw, when I could be right here having apples and sleeping in a soft bed."
"And is that all in your list of priorities?"
she asks with a pointed raise of her brow.
"I had one more, much stronger motivation,"
he answers with a leer. Leaning back over her, he kisses her once again, one hand reaching up to lay possessively on her breast. He's barely touching her, palm laid softly on her peak, and she shivers with the instinct to push against him, to incite more.
"You don't see me eating or sleeping, do you? My first priority was getting back to where we left off."
She whimpers, and she's not one whit ashamed.
"Draco."
"Did you miss me, Granger?"
he whispers against her cheek, placing soft kisses in his wake. She nods, eyes shut.
"Yes."
She draws the word through her lungs, hissing out her approval as he moves to nibble and lick at her jaw. His hand no longer idle, fingertips drag along her skin, reaching inside where her blouse has gapped, deftly unbuttoning her top. When he tweaks her carefully, one nibble between his thumb and forefinger, she keens and scrambles to grab his shoulders. Hermione pulls him back down, seeking his mouth, and moans into this kiss. He abandons her breast, which is disappointing, but she can't complain when instead his palms cup her cheeks, tilting her face upward as he consumes her. His tongue, no longer playful, is thrust roughly into her mouth, lips pressed against her so hard she thinks she may bruise. She really has missed him. She hadn't even been aware how much. Somehow, they fail to notice the sliding of the bricks, but Hermione is brought back to herself with a loud clearing of a throat. They break apart, and Hermione looks up to find Padma standing just beside the room divider, smiling toward the other side of the room, but shooting glances from the corner of her eye.
"My lord, a pleasure to see you,"
she announces loudly to the room, dramatic and rehearsed. Hermione is quite grateful. She meets Draco's wide eyes and reaches blindly for the pelt. When she finds it with her searching hand, she thrusts it at him and mouths,
"Put it on, quick,"
before virtually shoving him off the bed. He glares at her as he ties the front legs around his neck, but makes no protest as to her instruction. Hermione rights herself, buttoning her top and fluffing her curls into some semblance of order. She glides around the screen and greets her father, who is surveying the room in his usual haughty way.
Father, how lovely to see you.
My daughter, you seem in better spirits this evening. Have you enjoyed a pleasant day?
She smiles, not even having to pretend. Yes, today has turned out very well.
Excellent.
He waggles his finger at her, a playful and chastising smile on his lips.
Don't think I didn't notice your sour mood yesterday, my dove. Despair not. I know just what will brighten your day even further. As of this afternoon, I have begun entertaining young adventurers who would win your hand.
The fuck?
Hermione hears Draco's venomous whisper, but luckily her father seems unaware. She offers a smile, trying to appear grateful and placated.
That's wonderful. I do look forward to meeting whatever brave young man will finally find me.
Your wait may not be long at all. I've already been approached. You will remember the kind and generous merchant who brought you the darling lamb.
Her smile is frozen on her face, breath held hostage in her lungs.
The fuck, indeed. Well, it just so happens he will be the first to attempt. Come the morrow, he will be seeking you and your hand. Such a handsome fellow, was he not? Oh, what beautiful children you would make.
But, father,
she starts through clenched teeth and a grimace masquerading as a smile.
He has already visited me. Surely it would be unfair?
Her father waves the thought away.
Oh, pish, he was blindfolded, and cotton was stuffed in his ears. Surely you cannot find fault when he was thus handicapped. Do not fret, my dearest. I would sooner keep you locked away your whole life than see you wed to someone unworthy. But a merchant with a golden fleece? What a fine gentleman he must be.
Indeed, she says,
all she can manage. She thinks Snape must have rubbed off on her, and suddenly feels a kinship with the distaste the man obviously lived mired within. Is everyone in this fairy tale completely useless?
When will he be making this attempt?
At sundown, my love. Perhaps only one more day waiting for your heart's desire. Oh, pet, I do envy the possibilities before you. Young love on the horizon.
And is he the only to answer your trial? Surely there are other young men who might be joining the attempt.
Perhaps, he says with a shrug. He was the only one who arrived today. But I expect once word travels as to my acceptance, others will follow. Too bad for them, you might already be wed.
Hermione's vision tunnels into one black dot on the horizon, mind racing. This isn't how it's supposed to go. What the fuck, Rum? Outwardly, she is still smiling.
Well, it seems tomorrow might be quite exciting. I think I should retire.
He nods as if she's just put forth sage advice.
Clever as you are, beautiful precious one, I will not keep you.
He makes a stately bow to the three ladies, who giggle and titter as always.
And to you, most ripe and rare flowers, until tomorrow.
He wriggles his brows, and Hermione thinks she might gag. Once he has passed through the brick, Draco is barreling back into the room.
What the ever-loving fuck, Granger? What is going on with this asinine story? It wasn't bleeding stupid enough. The room decided to make it even more fucked.
She shakes her head, feeling a bit shell-shocked.
This can't be normal. Something has gone wrong. It must have.
She snaps her head back toward him, pointing a finger at his chest and voice growing stronger.
You have to go. Draco, you have to go get an audience tonight. Oh, dear Merlin, this nonsense might tie me to Gilderoy Lockhart. What if it still won't let us out? If I'm going to be stuck here any longer, I'm at least going to be snogging you, not that lunatic.
His smirk is slow, eyes dancing.
Well, well. Making plans to keep me around, Granger?
She stomps her foot, very much not appreciating his delight in her trauma.
Do try to focus, please.
His smirk blows wider, the other side of his mouth tweaking up to match the first, until he is full on grinning like a loon.
Oh, I am focused. Focused quite soundly on the part where you're actively trying to reach a happy ending, with me.
With one very unladylike shove to his chest, Hermione urges,
Oh, just go on, would you? It's barely sundown. If you can get him to agree, you can find me as soon as first thing tomorrow. Surely the room will let us go then.
He is still chuckling when he reaches for her, despite her half-hearted protests, and pulls her to his chest.
Careful, Granger. I'm starting to think you're getting attached. What if I just decide to keep you?
All the jumbled thoughts seem to stop at once, like the inner workings of a timepiece suddenly halted.
Keep her?
She thinks to deny it, considers quipping back.
Part of her wants to turn the proverbial tables, accuse him of projecting his own issues and desires. But she sees something behind the laughter in his gray eyes, and though never once inclined to bet, would wager there is something hopeful lurking, cloaked in mirth. So she drops her gaze, fiddling with the button on his peasant's shirt.
Maybe that wouldn't be so terrible.
She glances up, finding him staring back. Fingertips trail her cheek until his palm is cupping her face, thumb brushing just beneath her eye.
I did miss you, you know.
Not just the apples?
He chuckles, shaking his head.
Not just the apples. Maybe I should steal you away. Hide you from the king for a little while.
Her brow furrows.
I appreciate the notion, but don't you want to get back to real life?
Remember when we talked about the room? About time passing? If this is all happening in but a moment, Granger, we could enjoy a lot of time here. No consequences. Just us.
His lips have slowly descended as he talks, brushing hers as he finishes, but something about what he's said gives her pause. With her palm gently pushing on his chest to keep his attention, she asks,
What if it's not? What if...
She pulls back further, thinking it out.
I mean, we know the fairy tale is misbehaving, right? What if it's the whole thing? The room, the assignment? What if there's a problem, and we really are stuck in here?
You can't really think the professors would allow that.
Hermione shrugs.
No one really understands the room completely. Maybe they don't realize?
With a defeated and long-suffering sigh, Draco presses his forehead against hers.
You're not going to let this go, are you?
She shakes her head, keeping their contact and feeling his fringe tickle at her cheeks.
Probably not.
So we won't be getting back to the snogging tonight, regardless if I stay?
There is petulance in his tone, though it seems fond and almost amused as well. She smiles in response and agrees.
You're probably right on that account.
So I might as well go find your lech of a king and bid for your hand in the morning?
Hermione tilts her head and meets his gaze.
You do have to win the princess, you know. That's how these stories go.
She grins, cocking her head in a playful challenge.
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to break the rules.
He surprises her with this kiss, hard and fast and biting off his last word, so she can hardly even comprehend what he said. She is swept up, wrapping her arms around him, and squeaking in delight when his palms find her arse and lift her towards him. He moans into her mouth, and she feels him, hard and insistent, pressed against her stomach. A small hand grabs her arm, and Hermione is yanked away only to be faced with three gaping little tarts.
Princess, you mustn't! You must be kept a maiden for your future prince, even if this young man were to be him!
Hermione looks back at Draco, finding him flushed and dark-eyed, panting.
I guess I should speak with your father.
She nods a bit dumbly, and watches, still as stone, as he collects his pelt from her bedside and starts to make his way to the door. He looks back, flashing her a devastating grin.
Hopefully I'll see you in the morning, pretty witch.
Tearing herself from Padma's hold, still settled on her arm, Hermione crosses the room and yanks Draco down to her height, her hand on the back of his neck, to kiss him once more.
In the morning, she whispers in agreement. Then we will leave this nonsense behind, and...
She falters, momentarily losing her nerve. She looks up to see that same hopeful vulnerability in the depths of his eyes, and takes a breath.
And maybe I'd like to take you to Hogsmeade. Do you have plans?
He looks a bit struck, but finally shakes his head.
No plans. I'm all yours, Granger.
She smiles and shoves him toward the brick wall.
Remember that. I'm holding you to it.
She would swear she hears him whistling as the bricks close behind his back.